The Trump administration has escalated its feud with Harvard University, threatening to ban foreign student enrollment unless the university complies with demands to overhaul campus policies, including ending diversity programs. After freezing $2.2 billion in federal grants, President Trump has called Harvard a joke, while the university resists, citing academic freedom. The standoff risks Harvard's $9 billion funding and tax-exempt status. Joining us now, Jonah Blank, author and former advisor to President Biden, and Alex Zidane, an ex-Republican U.S. Senate candidate for New Jersey and a Republican strategist. And in a little while from now, we'll be joined by Professor William Kirby, a senior professor at Harvard University. Let me go across to you first, Jonah Blank. The Trump administration claims Harvard's failure to curb anti-Semitic protests violates Title VI, right, and therefore risks federal funding, billions of dollars. How do you justify Harvard's disciplinary approach when some suggest that Jewish students report feeling unsafe on campus?
Well, thanks for having me, Vishnu. Trump's attack on Harvard has absolutely nothing to do with anti-Semitism. It is only to do with Trump's own bile. If you just look at the letter that Trump's administration sent to Harvard, it asks the university to put itself into Donald Trump's receivership. The only attack he has is basically saying that Harvard should not allow students to protest Israeli policy in Gaza, which has nothing to do with the issue he's claiming it does. No university in America or anywhere in the world could possibly have given in to Trump and still considered itself a legitimate academic institution.
Alex Zidane, respond to that, but also answer this. Harvard argues that the government's demand to end diversity programs infringes on the First Amendment. First Amendment rights. How would you say defend the administration's push to dictate university policies when academic freedom is constitutionally protected in America?
Well, this is a day of reckoning for America's elitist, out-of-touch Ivy League universities. When you talk about academic freedom, Vishnu, I really wonder where those who advocate for academic freedom were last fall and last spring, and perhaps soon when Jewish students were being harassed walking to class by those who identified with the Palestinian cause. Where was the academic freedom for those students at that point? The Trump administration is taking these steps not just to defend those individuals, but to make sure that the Ivy Leagues, if they're going to take federal money, and that is an if, are responsible to the United States, the people of the United States, because the taxpayers are the ones providing that $9 billion that you spoke about in your introduction to Harvard. That's what's at the core of this. This is a much larger issue, and I think that those who cry about academic freedom would do well to remember that it's not mandatory for them to take subsidies from the federal government, especially when an institution like Harvard is sitting on a massive $52 billion endowment.
Jonah, respond to that. And while you're at it also, if you can take this question of the government, Washington demands merit-based hiring and admissions. They cite bias in Harvard's processes. I think a lot of people want to know, why does Harvard resist these reforms if they could, in fact, address accusations of discrimination and therefore restore public trust and save that money?
Yes. Well, I've taught at Harvard. I've taught hundreds of students at Harvard. I got my master's and my PhD from Harvard, so I'm pretty familiar with the way things operate there. And the way the administration describes it is 100% fiction. That's not what is happening. The administration is demanding what it calls viewpoint diversity. It's demanding that Harvard have a critical mass of MAGA students and faculty. What a critical mass is, we don't know, but it is absolutely nothing to do with merit-based hiring. They're demanding that hiring and admissions be specifically on ideological grounds of people who agree with Donald Trump. Now, on the issue of, is this a subsidy? Is this federal money going to Harvard as a handout? Absolutely not. This money that Trump is illegally putting on hold is money that Harvard has applied for as grants, mostly in the medical and science field. So this is not taking money away from philosophers or from people studying Palestinian causes. This is taking money away from Harvard's hospitals and research facilities, which are serving the public good. That's what this money is primarily doing.
Alex, would you like to respond to that? Because it is a fact that a lot of the federal funding goes towards cutting edge research, towards ending diabetes, fighting Alzheimer's, quantum, artificial intelligence, etc.
That money can go elsewhere, Vishnu. There are many dedicated researchers across the United States, across the world, working on making a huge amount of progress in those fields. It is not necessary for that work to go on at Harvard. It can happen elsewhere. When Mr. Blank talks about viewpoint diversity, he makes that sound like that's something the Trump administration is forcing on these universities. Viewpoint diversity should be the point of universities. It should be the point of going to colleges. And the fact that so many students go to these colleges and they feel as though they need to be indoctrinated in the progressive monoculture of these institutions shows that we have a problem with viewpoint diversity on American campuses, especially on the Ivy League. I don't think that is an unreasonable ask from the Trump administration. And the whole point of this discussion, the whole reason we're having this discussion, is the federal government does hold the strings, does hold the cards when it comes to funding. Whatever that funding is for, the federal government could choose to spend that money elsewhere. And I agree with President Trump that we should.
Jonah Blank, the government accuses Harvard of an entitlement mindset for ignoring civil rights obligations tied to federal funds. We've discussed a part of that. Why do you defend Harvard's rejection of reforms? And how do you respond to those who say that Harvard isn't in sync, or the values at Harvard aren't in sync with what a large number of Americans expect of an educational institution?
Well, there are a lot of things about Harvard and about higher education that should be reformed. I could go through a whole list of them. That has nothing whatsoever to do with what Donald Trump is trying to do. When he's presenting these demands to place Harvard into receivership for alleged crimes that don't even exist, this is not a serious argument. This is a mafia shakedown. And he's not just doing it at Harvard. He's already done it to Columbia and UPenn, which have caved, and to dozens of other universities which don't have Harvard's ability to fight back. This is not Trump versus Harvard. This is Trump versus the entire academic institution of America.
All right. Alex, Harvard claims the government's actions, like threatening to ban foreign students, are politically motivated. Even over here in India, and not specifically or necessarily about Harvard, there's a sense that America is no longer welcome for international students. There have been students who've been sent back because they have a parking ticket. There are others who haven't had a chance to even know about what they've been charged with, minor infringements. America has welcomed international talent. And we find this strange atmosphere now when a lot of people, young people, are really worried. Is that not a valid concern?
Well, I certainly sympathize with the families, especially those from India who want to send their students to institutions that are viewed as among the best in the world. I certainly think that the handful of cases that we have seen overblown publicity in the media do not represent the whole. And the whole is that students from foreign nations who want to come to the United States of America and learn and advance in a field of science, get engineering backgrounds, advance in the humanities, are and will always be welcome in the United States of America and can choose where they decide to go. What we're talking about and what the Homeland Security Secretary has been talking about is a very small amount of bad apples who come to the United States, and whether it is intentional or whether it is something that they decide to do while they're over here, they come to a place where they are campus agitators and they're making anti-Semitic commentary. They are blocking students from coming to school, and those folks there should be a zero tolerance policy for. But I want to be very clear to parents in India and elsewhere. If you want your child to come to America to be a student, if they play by the rules, they're welcome here.
All right. Look, we'll leave it over there. It is a huge debate. It isn't going anywhere. A little while earlier on, I spoke to Professor William Kirby, a university distinguished service professor at Harvard, asked him all of these questions and several more. Do take a look. Well, joining us now, a very special guest, William Kirby, is a university distinguished service professor at Harvard University. Thank you very much, Professor Kirby, for being with us. I think
it's a pleasure. Thank you.
So many people around the world are really concerned about what's happening in the United States. Besides anything else, Harvard produces extraordinary learning, something that people around the world benefit from. I thought it would be useful to speak to you to get a sense of where Harvard stands on some of the critical issues that the U.S. government has raised. So I'm going to go through those issues and perhaps get a response from you. And one of the key points is that the government demands that Harvard end DEI programs, arguing that they fuel bias and anti-Semitism. How do you justify maintaining these programs when they're seen as contributing potentially to a divisive campus environment?
Actually, in my experience, seeking a wide-ranging student body and a faculty from different backgrounds is actually essential to academic excellence in the modern age. Harvard used to be a place that admitted only men, only white men from Boston and a few areas around, maybe a few from New York if they were fortunate. But we were a very parochial institution. We did not become a strong university as a research university until we also reached out to virtually every state in the United States to have geographic diversity, but also reached out then in more recent times to the wider world to bring in, to try to bring in the best talent that we could on our faculty and in our student body from around the world. And so if one wants to maintain parochialism, if one wants to maintain, you know, the heritage of, you know, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, actually Puritans, who founded Harvard, that's not a winning game if you want to bring the best talent in the world to your campus. Our job is excellence and the search for truth and seeking the very best people who can help us find it.
Professor, the Department of Education's task force has accused Harvard of having what it says is a troubling entitlement mindset, one that they allege ignores civil rights obligations tied to federal funding, which is a key part of this entire debate. How do you defend Harvard's rejection of reforms when $9 billion in U.S. taxpayer money is at stake?
Well, I could easily defend it, and I know the university will defend it, because we have not, in our view, violated any of these civil rights laws. And in fact, we have been a leader in bringing about excellence in research, but also diversity on campus in a way that strengthens us. We don't do it diversity, as it were, for diversity's sake. Let me give you one example in my own history department. When I joined the Harvard History Department in 1992, we had 31 tenured faculty members, 1.5 of whom were women. And we were a declining department because so much of the young talent coming into that field was female. Today, we are a department of nearly half of its tenured members are female, with a wide range of both ethnic and international backgrounds. And it is a much better scholarly department than ever it has been. So it's by experience that you need to be open to talent wherever it is. That has been our motto, and that is what we have pursued. And we've also pursued, I think without any apology whatsoever, a more diverse student body. You know, your average citizen will believe, you know, Harvard is such an expensive place. You know, you have to be rich to go to Harvard as an undergraduate. But we have, this started when I was Dean of the Faculty of Arts and Sciences, and it continues today. We have reached out to make it clear that you do not have to be rich to come to Harvard. 70% of our undergraduates are on financial aid. And if your income is under $200,000 U.S. and you'll get into Harvard College, that college will be free to you. We believe that this is important to have income diversity, as well as geographic diversity, for the students in the college, and to make it less a place of automatic inherited privilege than it was earlier in its history.
There's also the entire argument on viewpoint diversity. How can Harvard claim to uphold free inquiry when critics in the government, for example, argue that your campuses lean heavily left, thereby limiting conservative perspectives? They feel that that needs to be represented on campus as well.
Right. And I think here you are dealing with a kind of a demographic truth that many, you know, a large percentage of faculty at any university in the United States are more likely to be on the liberal, central to liberal side than on the conservative to right-wing side of many political issues. I think that is true. But we do not ban discussion. We encourage discussion of every possible issue. In my own classes, I force students to have debates on issues on which they will have to defend points of view with which they may well disagree. But in order to air these points, I think this is a problem in American campuses. I wrote a book just a few years ago called Empires of Ideas, looking at the rise of the modern university in Germany, America, and China in particular. And I talk about in that book the fact that in the year 2013, the Central Committee of the Chinese Communist Party said that there were seven things not to talk about at a Chinese university, and they enforced it pretty strictly. But when I gave that talk at Berkeley about that moment, one member of the audience raised her hand and said, well, you know, Professor Kirby, there are at least seven things we can't talk about at Berkeley. And that's not wrong. There is a sense of what had been political correctness, of what you're able to speak at an American campus. And that's not imposed from on top. It is actually imposed from peer pressure and others. And that is not good. And we need to fight against it. I try to do so in my own classes, and I know many of my colleagues do as well. But it is a constant effort.
Professor Kirby, the government, the Trump administration, threatens to revoke your tax-exempt status, Harvard's tax-exempt status, and says that your university acts as a political entity. In fact, those were the words that they used, rather than a public interest institution. Is your university a public interest institution, or do you believe that you can educate others and you can learn just for the sake of learning?
Well, I think it is. Harvard is a first of all, you should know that Harvard was founded as a public institution. It was a state-owned enterprise, as it were, of the Massachusetts Bay Colony. Citizens throughout New England paid taxes to support Harvard until the founding of some strange college in New Haven, Connecticut, about a century later, called Yale. And then we lost our monopoly. But today, I would think we are proudly a private university with an enduring sense of public purpose. Eight presidents have graduated from Harvard, multiple senators and congresspeople. We have our Kennedy School serves to educate people of how to serve in government. We are proudly public in our sense of duty. And if you look at the history of the university, in great crisis of the United States, whether it's the Revolutionary War, where George Washington was headquartered in what is now Harvard Yard, or in the case of the Second World War, when the entire campus was turned over basically to the American military as a training facility, we have been central to the national purposes of the United States. The idea that it is actually illegal to take away the tax status of any institution for political reasons. President Nixon tried that in his abuse of the Internal Revenue Service in the 1970s, and Congress passed a law to ban that. And so I'm quite confident that we will prevail on legal grounds.
What are the potential implications for international students? Because now there are some reports which suggest that the U.S. government might make moves which curtail your ability to bring in international students.
Right. This is perhaps, one of the greatest dangers to American universities, not just to Harvard. This kind of mindless attack on international students, the expelling of a number of them without any due process whatsoever, will have a chilling effect on our ability to recruit international students. you know, the undergraduate colleges in the United States are predominantly American, peopled by American citizens. That's certainly true of Harvard College. But if you look at the professional schools and the graduate schools where the great research goes on, if you are not open to international talent from India, from China, from anywhere in the world, then you will decline, because those countries are home to more of the best human capital, particularly in science, engineering, technology, than any place on earth. And if we cut ourselves off from that talent, we will absolutely decline.
And so that brings me to my final question. The administration claims Harvard's resistance to reforms undermines the public benefit that you get out of federal funding, and that, of course, supports life-saving research, whether it's diabetes, Alzheimer's, et cetera, et cetera. The government says that you need to be accepting these funds because it helps you do the research that you do, and to receive those funds, you have to balance academic freedom with what the government expects you to do in terms of upholding civil rights and public interest. This is a crisis now in the United States. How do you see this going? Because, you know, I mean, both issues, both views are very strong.
So I would say, as a historian who has studied the history of higher education, my first thought was the Trump administration was going to be a bit of a deja vu of the McCarthyite hearings, in which they tried to politicize life on campus. They interrogated professors. They expelled graduate students, including international students. And it was a form of political terror. But this is different. Left to its own devices, this is more like Germany. This is more like Berlin in 1933, or more like Beijing in 1950, when first a Nazi or a communist government took over pretty extraordinary universities and university systems and made them politically correct from their point of view, and oversaw their decline. German universities have never fully recovered from that moment. University of Berlin was the greatest university in the world from its founding in 1810 until 1933. Today, it's not the best in the world. It's not the best in Germany. It's no longer even the best in Berlin. These things have consequences. But on the positive side, I will say, and you can take the great Chinese universities as an example today, universities outlast governments. They certainly outlast presidential administrations. Harvard University was founded before there was a United States, in 1636. We will be here long after this administration is gone, and who knows how long the United States will last, but my betting is that we'll be here after that.
All right, Professor Kirby, wonderful speaking to you. William S. C. Kirby, University Distinguished Service Professor at Harvard, telling us about where the university stands in what is now a fairly protracted battle with the U.S. government. Thank you, sir, very much for being with us.
It's an honor to be with you. Thank you so much.